This is what I'm going to talk about. I think a lot of what I was planning to say, a lot of the previous speakers have said probably better than I would have done, and so I'm going to be able to move over the slides quite quickly and focus more on what we're actually doing. So I've got some stuff on what is the problem, but I think that's been really quite well described by a number of people. So this is a bit about my centre, CACHE, the Cumbrian... What do we call it? Cumbria Centre for Health Technologies. Mine went blank there. And we're a small centre at the University of Cumbria, and we do applied research and consultancy, particularly on the problem of adoption of digital technologies in health and social care. So very much looking at some of the things that have been raised about how we can do better evaluations, how we can use evidence better, and how we can get people to be more clear about how they're going to use the evidence, how they're going to make decisions about based on the evidence they get, and therefore collect the right evidence, which is, I think, a problem that Dave outlined very, very excellently. And so we've had funding for a number of programmes. We've had quite a bit from the AHSN. Thank you very much. We've also had funding from the North East AHSN, because Cumbria falls partly into to their area, and we've had some funding from other organisations as well to do various sorts of small studies and evaluations. And in particular, we've developed a postgraduate teaching programme, which you've seen the leaflets around, and that's been very successful, as quite a few of our students are in the room actually, so that's nice to see. So that's to help people who are trying to introduce digital technologies, to support them in transforming services and provide them with a sort of academic basis for doing that. You can read this stuff when you get the slides. So this is the scope. We're interested in all types of digital technology that's shown there, and emerging technologies. So we're this just a few slides on the environment and what is the problem. Essentially, we're talking about a situation where we've got consumer technology being introduced into health and social care delivery. And we've talked about this quite a bit this morning. We all understand the problem, and that's causing a big clash of cultures. And we're trying to apply... So the consumer's now in the driving seat, or potentially in the driving seat, but we're trying to apply our old-fashioned systems of evidence-based medicine. Obviously, we do want evidence-based medicine. It's a desirable thing. But we're trying to apply very old-fashioned systems to get that evidence through doing piloting and evaluation, and then hopefully moving to adoption. But we're not. We're going round and round in a circle doing lots of pilots and lots of evaluations. And my research is about understanding why we're doing that and how we can move faster through it. And it's basically to do with everyone concerned understanding what evidence they need and getting more connected and more engaged with that process. You can read that when the slides come out, because it's already been said. So we've developed something called the Stakeholder Empowered Adoption Model, and this essentially says what success looks like depends on where you are on that diagram. So success doesn't mean the same thing to a patient as it does to a finance director in a trust. But we need to collect evidence for all those people. And the finance director's the one that's harder. And also, the other people who have really big problems with it are the frontline staff. And we've done a lot of work on understanding their issues and the barriers around professional staff using technology, and our course has developed partly to address that. But they're really important people, and that's not been well enough understood in rolling out technology in the past. So we've done four studies so far that are completed, and we're writing them up. There's various, two of them are published, which you can read academic papers on the subject. And from this, we've synthesised what are the main barriers and what are the name enablers for technology. So I'm just going to go through each of those stakeholder groups. The first one is technology. So this is the technologists, the suppliers, but also perhaps the technologists within within the NHS, within the user organisation. And there's lots of technology. Technology actually exists. It works in some way. But there are lots of barriers still. And one of the barriers is actually that the innovations are coming from small companies who don't have the clout and the budgets to perform this very rigorous, very sort of cumbersome evaluation process. And I think there's also something about how innovations are able to develop, and this is something that small companies can do. So designs need to change as they go into service. Again, a number of people have spoken about that, but companies need to develop techniques for being able to support that. And we're looking at how we can work with companies so that they understand and they can build in an evaluation and an evidence and benefits realisation process as they go through their development process. Then I've got a lot on staff, because staff are the big one. So there's with staff, it's about perceptions, it's about understanding how they build confidence to learn new things. We've worked with Veronica and others, and some of these quotations are from that study with speech and language therapists, and you can see the sorts of things. So there are issues around confidence, skills, but also there are bigger issues around professional identities and people thinking, I didn't train as whatever profession to sit in front of a computer screen. There's also issues about ways of working. So many of these interventions require people to work through another person. So you saw the video of Veronica's video in the care home. There was a nurse in the care home working, sitting with the patient, and the speech and language therapist had to instruct the nurse and what to do. And we had a lot of discussions about how they had difficulty with that. It's a completely new way of working. They're used to working directly with the patient. So there's a lot of issues, which is summarised here, about how we overcome those barriers and how we work through them. So so a lot of it is just skills and confidence, and those, that's actually been underestimated, I think, a lot in the past. But there's also some very more complex issues around people being empowered to modify their work practices, I haven't put them on here because some of them are a bit sensitive, but I've got lots of stories about blockers, and I'm sure you all have, about individuals who have stopped a good innovation happening. Not necessarily people in powerful positions, but people who are able to block things. And that's something that we need to understand and address. But there's lots of enablers as well. So we've got some great individuals who are very innovative and very able to champion something and to influence their colleagues. And those people need to be supported, and we need to find new ways of working with those people and giving them a sort of structure around them to innovate. There's also a big thing about patients, because most people who work for the NHS and social care providers, I'm pleased to say, and it's in all of my experience, they are very motivated by what benefits the patients. So it's really key to identify the specific benefits of the patient and be really clear about it. And we're not always, that sounds obvious, but things aren't always that clear. They're often aimed at that finance director, and it's not the right person. There's a lot about education and training, so we're looking at that as a university. We're looking very carefully about how we can structure educational offerings to support people at all different levels. And there's a real need to work differently at sort of executive level to support the innovation process. Patients actually aren't really the problem. Most patients, in my experience, patients will experiment because actually they're the people who often benefit most directly. So there's some stories here The top one is interesting because we sort of naively perhaps thought, well, what do the patients think of this? And actually the patients said, well, I've never had a swallowing assessment before, so I just assumed this is how it was done. So, you know, they're often having something, there's a lot of other stuff going on, they're having something quite perhaps frightening, perhaps difficult done to them. The fact that there's a video screen actually is, it's neither here nor there, it's just one of those things. And there's a lot of other problems that they're more worried about than the digital bit. And then there's them, we've all got lots of stories about how people are unable to live a more normal life. So there's another quote there. But we have recognised that there are types of patients who can who are suitable, and types who aren't or don't want to, and one size doesn't fit all. And just starting to do a bit of work on what are the dimensions of suitability for digital health, and that's very early stage. But looking at how all these different factors interact. So it's things like the patient activation process tool, which you may be familiar with, and just health literacy, digital literacy, and social circumstances. So some of those can be changed. The literacy issues can be addressed, and people can be supported through coaching and training. And again, I think that's been recognised in many of the presentations, but some of them are not changeable. Connectivity is also an issue. Again, that's particularly in rural areas. Okay. So management barriers, this is quite a difficult area, I think, because we've got all sorts of problems which we know about. We've got the whole commissioning, the structure of perverse incentives. But at the same time, we've also got very strong government drivers, policy drivers to implement change. So I think some of those things could be overcome probably quite quickly, and maybe they will, if we could, if we could get the conversation right. But I don't think we have yet. And I think there's a lot to do with this process of how we use evidence and how we address risks and for new innovations, and there needs to be a whole new approach in how innovation is structured and sponsored. And that's something I think we're quite at the beginning of that conversation, and that's something we need to start working on. And the cost benefit, I think, is obviously critical, but we need to design evaluations to show that, if possible, or accept we can't show it, because very often it's not possible to show a cost benefit of the kind of, you know, you can't say it's not like by changing your brand of paperclips. It's and I know you all know this, but you know, you're trying to demonstrate often an incremental change in a complex situation. So you can't say this person, you can't put this person in an isolation and do a scientific experiment on them. That there may be all sorts of factors of why their health improves or doesn't. And so we need to really get away from expecting that and start thinking, how can we really show useful cost benefits? So our whole, you know, there's a whole sort of approach to how we do the health economics, which we need to think through. So, and these are some of the other emerging themes which don't quite fit. So one thing that comes up often with GPs. I think GPs are quite against technology, I find. I don't know how many GPs there are in the room. I'll just offend everyone. But we always get this thing about that if you give people more ability to manage their health, they'll become obsessed, they'll become hypochondriacs. That's a concern. We have to think about how we deal with that. I suspect what happens is people do get very obsessed for a short period of time, but then it tails off, which I think is probably what happens. I mean, I know myself, you know, when I've got something, some new thing wrong with me, I'm Googling and all sorts of things. But, you know, it tails off after a while. So that's a theme which, again, we have to think about what the answer is to that, because it is a real thing. We do have very busy people and busy GPs. There's something about delivering across different services. Again, our current structures don't work for that very well. And there's something about risks as well. And I think we often get these evaluations done and then people just don't trust them. They sort of say, we've got this data, we've got all this information, but we just don't really, it doesn't really help us to make a decision. It's not really answered our questions. So they're not always trusted. And that's it. So how am I doing for time? So I've got some slides on further work, which... We're up to time. Okay, I have got some slides on new ideas and things I'd like to do, but you can look at those when you get them electronically. Thank you.